Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. One of the things I've realized in doing the show over the years is that when you do a panel, usually it's nice to have panelists. And so far in the studio, only Mike Spain has reported to duty. But oh, here they come. They're marching in as we speak. Yes, we need you. Thank you very much. Let me introduce the panel. As they walk in, you can make a grand entrance. Rob, do you have any traveling music? No, I'm just kidding. Rosemary Armeo is here. She is the director of the journalism program at UAlbany. Mike Spain is with us. He is the associate editor of the Times Union. And Alan Chartok joins us. Good morning. It's nice to have you all in your seats.
Have you ever noticed that what happens is that when Thanksgiving shows up on a Thursday,
yes,
that you have to get the work done for the week by Wednesday? In other words, a lot of people take Friday off.
Thursday, Friday, you have to get in a Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday.
So, Joe, it's like being in a compression chamber. Things get compressed here. I apologize for being late.
You were right in the time for your introduction.
Only because I was trying to get one of my two weekly columns out of the way, and it's not easy to do that.
What was your excuse?
Thank you, sir.
I'm not supposed to use my phone in here, so I was like getting in a last message before I had to sign off for 90 minutes.
You go off the grid for a whole 90 minutes, dear God. Well, we have a lot to talk about this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable, panel at WAMC.org. Panel. Yeah. At WAMC.org, and we welcome your thoughts. We welcome your comments. We may or may not read them, and we may even like them. how's that? So the breaking news this morning is that the Trump transition team announced this morning that they have no plans. They will not pursue further investigations of Hillary Clinton's private email server or the Clinton Foundation, according to his former campaign manager. That is the story that is breaking as we speak.
Wow. So they're going to give her a bye. It sounds like the Saturday Night Live routine I saw with Alec Baldwin playing Donald Trump, and then Pence comes in and Trump is all frustrated because the generals are asking him how they're going to, what's the secret plan to get ISIS and everything. And he says, people, there's, 20 million people on Obamacare, sir. What are we going to do? He goes, well, forget about it. We'll just leave it. You wonder what he's going to do with these outrageous rhetorical claims he made, like having a registry for Muslims and, putting Hillary Clinton behind bars. I mean, that was just useful rhetoric to rally the base up, I guess, and it got the vote out, and it worked. He got elected. Now he doesn't have to worry about it.
So Kellyanne Conway was on Morning Joe this morning, said, I think when the president-elect, who's also the head of your party, tells you before he's even inaugurated that he doesn't wish to pursue these charges, it sends a very strong message, tone, and content to fellow Republicans.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, he's already been told that no prosecutor would carry those charges forth, which is true. Even if he had a special prosecutor, if the special prosecutor were qualified, he was not going to bring back an indictment. That would have happened already. I think Comey would have been more than willing to prosecute if there was anything there or any of those congressional committees. So what he's done is common sense. And yet it's been so crazy up to now. We're now applauding a common sense decision. I'm glad it happened. I was one saying that Obama should pardon her because he's so nutty. You don't know what had happened, and you wouldn't want that hanging over, the country's head. We sounded like such a banana republic that we were going to lock her up.
Alan,
boy,
I mean, that was such a part of his campaign of lock her up. So does he break a major campaign promise to his base, and does that make a difference to them?
I don't think he thinks for a single minute any of it matters. I mean, I don't think he does, but there's a nagging thought, Joe, in the back of my mind, which is, in terms of doing this to Hillary, Do you really want to do unto somebody else what you might have to contend with in the future might be done unto you? In other words, there are so many pitfalls for Obama here, for Trump here, that, you know, in terms of all the entanglements and the foreign entanglements and, you know, the Russian stuff and all of that, that would you really want to set a precedent for jailing political opponents when someday it might be your turn?
Well, I wish I thought he thought that far ahead and that strategically, Alan. I don't think he does. He still, and really the evidence is there to support him, sees himself as a winner. Even if you look at the settlement at Trump University, he defrauded, what, 3,500 people? Was that the number? And they all, no, it's actually more than that, but each of them paid $35,000 to go.
Yeah.
And his settlement was $25
million. Yeah, yeah.
He made out like a bandit in that. He makes out all the time. And I don't think he sees any trouble with his entanglements. If you look at the Constitution, it says, unless you have a special arrangement from Congress. You don't think he could get that? Congress could just say, poof, no problem. You have a right to make money, too.
I think
too.
It's in the Constitution that you have to be careful about accepting benefits from foreign entities,
right.
Not just governments, but right.
Unless you have a special arrangement from Congress.
Yeah. That still matters, the Constitution. Yeah,
I think it may.
Just checking.
No,
just
but
checking.
But if you were an inside advisor to Trump, wouldn't you advise him to say, you know, this Hillary thing, you know, you won the election, you're the new president, it'll be a distraction, and it won't help. Why don't you just move past it?
And it certainly, Mike, won't bring the country together.
No, it won't.
You know, that would just be a signal that what you're trying to do. Look, you're going to have 1 million people on the streets the day after inauguration in Washington and probably now in New York. There's a second march that is being arranged there. So you really need at some point to say, okay, we've got to cut the divisive of this net down. Now, that's why I think naming, a moderate Secretary of State in the face of everything like Romney, everything else that's going on. I think if you name Giuliani now, it's just one more spit in the eye of the people who didn't want you. Now, Rosemary is shaking her head.
Yeah, I really want you to be right, Alan, but I just don't see any moderation in him at all. I think he took a common sense decision, which is that we're not going to get an indictment against Hillary, and he's using it smartly. Kellyanne's involvement convinces me of this. Using it smartly to say, look, I'm throwing out an olive leaf. I'm going to be the president to all the people. And then he's going to continue putting Nazis onto his Nazis and hawks onto his cabinet.
Well, Nazis,
that's who he wants.
Nazi is obviously a very strong word.
Did you see him Sig Heiling in Washington yesterday?
No.
Whoa.
It was over the weekend, I believe.
Yeah, the Washington restaurant.
They were showing it last
Saturday
night. Sig Heil.
They were doing
Hail.
Heil,
they were going, Hail. But that's German for Heil. And the arms were out. It was terrifying, and they were Nazis.
It was a celebration
the
of the alt-right. Yes, it's
but they're
a
Nazis,
and they were there. It was in the Ronald Reagan office building.
Yeah. They were there celebrating the election of our new president.
Well, look, I have no truck for the alt-right, obviously, and I heard the interview on NPR, which was unbelievable, with one of the guys that had waded in trying to start a fight. Obviously,
Richard Spencer.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I think we have to be careful with our words. I've used the words that you're just using now as we came to this point because some of the things he said were fascistic, and I worried about that. But I think this guy knows if he is to succeed, he is going to have to, in some ways, pacify the left. Now, you don't agree with that, and I hope you're right. I hope I'm right and that you're wrong.
But isn't that?
Yeah, I do too.
Isn't part of pacifying the left in denouncing some of the behavior that's happening on the far right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which he has not done.
Well, he did a little something, but it wasn't much.
He looked at the camera during the 60 Minutes interview.
That was during the protesting. I mean, we're talking about these individual events that are racist, anti-Semitic, and very disturbing.
Look, Joe, there are two ways he can go here. There is the moderation way, or there is the repression way. And we have seen dictators and people who get elected do this kind of thing in the past. That's where you get the water cannons and you start to throw people in jail and you try to, and I know we're going to talk about this, you try to quiet down any opposition in the press to anything you're doing and to call them in and to basically warn them not to, that they have to behave. So you have two models here. And I'm just hoping that the model that I'm looking at is he knows if he has half the country inflamed, he has to do something about it.
Meanwhile, are we taking a stand as a panel on how we feel about new polls now? So do we want to believe them or not believe them? I don't know.
The polls were right on election night. They were within 2 or 3%.
That's right, Mike.
Margin of error.
What's the
news,
Joe?
Is this the one about how happy everybody is with Trump?
Yeah, 47%? The CNN ORC poll says 53% say they think Trump will do a fairly or very good job as president. 40% say they have a lot of confidence in Trump to deal with the economy. And out of 46, he has a 46% approval rating and a 45% disapproval rating.
And what's Hillary's now? This is interesting, too. She did really well. And that she's lost.
Yeah, it
now
might
that
have been another poll yesterday.
It must be a different poll.
Her report card was like A and B, and his were below, you know, in another survey. But I don't know what that means. What are they rating her on? Today.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good. People are, you know, waiting and seeing and giving them a chance, just like everyone says we have to do. We have to be gracious. I'm having more trouble with it than apparently 47% of the people. But that's fine. Here's what it really says to me is that he better deliver on that economic promise and he better not take 4 years to do it, or the same people who came flooding to him with their votes are going to leave him just as fast.
Well, also, I'm sorry, Mike.
No, but I was just going to mention that Paul Krugman, you know, the economist / Nobel laureate at the New York Times, said that the way the economy is going, it's probably going to prosper for a couple of years because of the momentum it already has, and he'll get all the credit.
Well, and I have to say that the stock market is going up, and going up significantly, although, no, never mind.
Joe, we interrupted you.
Well, no, my question was, I mean, also, the poll numbers have been really good, but he has only, other than, I mean, election night was two weeks ago. And we saw him. We saw him at the victory celebration, and then he was on Capitol Hill the Thursday after. And then, other than the video that came out yesterday, we haven't seen him.
That's right. He hasn't had press conference since June.
This is a different Donald Trump now.
This is
the guy who is going to be seeing himself as a president as opposed to an insider. He did what he, see, I don't agree with Rosemary when she says he doesn't think that far ahead. I think he's extremely bright. I think he knows what he's doing. I think he knew it in the television realm. I think he knew it in the election realm. And when he does things like, say, the first thing I'm going to do is throw, you know, the Asian Pacific Trade Pact, TPP.
Yeah.
When they throw, then I'm going to throw that out, you know, and I'm going to make specific arrangements with each of those countries. Now that's good, I think he's thinking, for this country. I'm going to really bully them. I'm going to make sure that they do what's good for us and not necessarily what's good for the world, as in contrast to Obama, who really believed that when you started to negotiate these things, you had to negotiate it for everyone, not just for this country. And I think there's a big distinction between that, and I think a lot of Americans are going to like the Trump way.
Yes, they are. I think there's a feeling that Obama waves the blue flag of the United Nations, the conspiracy theorists thought he was going to march into Texas and imprison everybody a couple of years ago. There is a feeling that if you do something that is good for the whole world, it somehow compromises our stability and our future.
It also leaves out of the equation China, which can do the same thing. And they got pretty good negotiations and a lot more power in the countries that we're talking about than the United States. I don't know. I was reading about Mexico. I mean, apparently he can actually force the Mexicans to pay for his stupid wall.
The wall that isn't going to be, by the way.
Well, we'll see. Whatever he's going to do. He can get money from them, though, by increasing, for example, the fee on visas, increasing the cost to bring goods in and out of,
a lot of people, out of the United States,
bridges and remittances could be taxed. Mm. And there's ways he actually could do it.
But will he?
I think his ratings are going up right now because of two things. One is he's coming in, he's a strong man, and he's appointing lots of other strong men, and that makes a certain segment of the population feel, okay, we're going to be safe now. We've got some hardliners in there.
I think there's a
sense of comfort in that, distressing as it is to me. I can understand that.
Yeah, me too.
Well, also, as to echo the point that you made yesterday, Rosemary, which is that he so far has been putting on a good show, right?
I mean, I made that point.
It's good entertainment.
He has
to see these people parade through Trump Tower, TV anchors.
Or his golf course.
I'm not going to take his salary, but he is going to live in New York part of the time, which will cost tens of millions of dollars to do that. That's good. And he's going after the press. Everybody hates the press, so that's entertaining.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I definitely am out of step, I think, with the 47% of people, all those people calling for
balance.
But
how many of those 47% that voted for Trump and elected him president, how many of them are really want him to do everything he said, or they just were expressing a cry of anger against the establishment? You know, I mean, that remains to be seen. I don't know that it was 47% that firmly wanted, a database of Muslims, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They just didn't want what the Democrats were offering and were mad. Some of them did want those extreme positions, but it's mixed, and that has to play out.
I just want to go over the quick list here of what he was talking about in the video that he sent, the video message. Regarding the first 100 days, I'm going to issue our notification of intent to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a potential disaster for our country. On energy, I will cancel job-killing restrictions on the production of American energy, including shale energy and clean coal, creating many millions of high-paying jobs. On regulation, I will formulate a rule which says that for every one new regulation, two old regulations must be eliminated, so it's important. On national security, I'll ask the Department of Defense and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to develop a comprehensive plan to protect America's vital infrastructure from cyber attacks and all other forms of attack. And on immigration, I'll direct the Department of Labor to investigate all abuses of visa programs that undercut the American worker. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion, panel@wamc.org. President-elect Donald Trump met Monday with television news executives and some well-known TV journalists and repeatedly told them that the campaign reporting about him was unfair and dishonest. Participants in the meeting at Trump Tower in New York described it as a contentious but generally respectful gathering. But if the media elite attended in hopes of improving relations with the forthcoming Trump administration, that wasn't quite in the cards. The president-elect specifically called out reporting by CNN and NBC that he deemed unfair, according to four people who attended the meeting, all of whom spoke in the condition of anonymity, because the meeting was off the record. The ground rules prevented the networks from reporting the very story that they were a part of. On Tuesday, Trump reopened another front in the media criticism with a series of tweets that said he called off a planned meeting with the New York Times, claiming that the newspaper changed the ground rules. The newspaper said no such last-minute shift was made. I canceled today's meeting with a failing New York Times when the terms and conditions of the meeting were changed at the last moment. Not nice, Trump tweeted. But a statement from Eileen Murphy, a spokeswoman for the New York Times, said the newspaper did not change the rules for the meeting. Murphy said the session had planned two parts, a small off-the-record portion and then a larger on-the-record section with reporters and columnists. We were unaware that the meeting was canceled until we saw the president-elect's tweets this morning, said Murphy.
Joe, it is so interesting that when, in the few conversations I've had with Andrew Cuomo since he got mad at me, there have been, he would always start the conversation, let's keep this just between us. So the last thing, I mean, people in power are always trying to manipulate the press to come over to their side and not to do their jobs. And their jobs, Rosemary, is...
Well, we cover important things. It's not just what people want to hear or think that they need to hear. It's what, you know, over time, I guess, has proved to be important. So it is really interesting to hear people, and some of our listeners are doing this too, saying we should cover this or we shouldn't cover that. I think the press pool, forget about it. He doesn't want to do it. Yeah, argue about it, but reassign those people to something else. The thing about the press, reassign them to do investigative reporting. I want to find out what happened in the election.
Oh, I see what you mean.
I don't mean to overthrow him or anything, but what really did happen with our election? Was it interfered with? What was the role of the Russians? Could we get his business records? Could we look at his taxes? Let's start looking for real stuff and also what he's doing. So, for example, when he puts out a video on what he's going to do his first 100 days, I would cover that. But if he's going to put out a picture of him and his daughter and the Japanese prime minister and he wouldn't let a press person come in and ask questions and take their own photos, I wouldn't print that.
What about the tweets? Because every tweet is getting published.
Yeah. In fact, I was on a panel I moderated a panel of some really smart political scientists and political strategists talking about the election last night. And the two things that most struck me were that people don't read tweets. The general population
public
does not bother with tweets or cable news, but journalists do. And so journalists are the ones who picked up all of or many of Donald Trump's tweets, turned them into major stories. He even commented himself about how amazing that was. He'd tweet something in his house and there it was on the news. We did that.
So just to be
and
clear.
And we therefore.
Okay, but just to be clear, Rosemary,
yeah.
is it your position that we should not be paying attention to the tweets?
I think we have to listen to it because I had not thought about this before. So by publicizing his tweets, by turning them into major stories, we let Donald Trump set the agenda of what was discussed. So it was immigration, it was trade. It wasn't how the economy has improved under Obama. It wasn't, name any other thing that Hillary Clinton cared about that
But other
that
people
he did
were
not.
Tweeting all during the campaign. There were some very clever tweets from people who were opposed to Trump, individuals. Hillary Clinton's camp was tweeting. He just seemed to...
it wasn't seemed. The numbers are amazing
the
at how
The language
much.
And the way to fit into...
Yeah.
Know, 141 characters.
He's a master brander and an advertiser, but we fell for it.
So let me ask this question. The group Monday included some of the top news media figures targeted by Trump during the campaign, including Meet the Press anchor Chuck Todd, ABC News anchor George Stephanopoulos and David Muir, CNN's Wolf Blitzer and Aaron Burnett, ABC correspondent Martha Raddatz, who apparently went off, and I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that conversation, NBC Nightly News anchor Lester Holt, and a CBS contingent that included Nora O'Donnell, Charlie Rose, John Dickerson, and Gail King. Would you have gone?
Was this all one big group?
Yes.
Wow.
Around a conference table.
Wow.
To sit with him and talk to him, but it was supposed to be off the record.
Yes. Well, would you have gone?
I don't do off the record with the
president
of the United
States. Do you guys
States,
do that?
No.
I mean, you know, I can say that at the Times Union we have an editorial board rule where we don't allow politicians or public officials to go off the record. And invariably they'll come in and they say, can we just go off the record on that?
No.
And Jay Jochnowitz will say, no, I'm sorry, that's our policy. And they stop. I mean, they can't go off the record because everything they say in that room is
It's hard to fight the press. The last administration that did this in this sort of concerted way we're seeing now is Nixon and Agnew. And ultimately that did
Natalie
not help
Nabob's
them
of
negativism.
Negativism, right.
And that did not worry him. However, the media right now is in some trouble. There's transition. Print is losing money and positions. So they're weak right now. And to have the president of the United States targeting the media for really doing their job, that's the part he doesn't like. The people he targeted didn't just show bias against him. They were digging up a lot of bad information about him. What can he do to hurt them? Can he cost them jobs?
You bet.
Yeah,
you bet.
Feels
and
like
as
it.
As I said the other day, this is what Neustadt called the law of anticipated reaction. You sit back and you say, okay, look, I remember when the mayor of Albany, am I wrong about this, would not put the legal advertising that helped support the Times Union He wouldn't allow it. He put it in the Jewish world, as I remember it, and
the Evangelist.
And the Evangelist.
The Catholic Diocese newspaper. So, yeah, look, that was famous back in the...
But it's a good example of some of the things that they can do.
Oh, sure. But I'm thinking of the FCC, you know, cracking down on things. You know, Nixon actually passed the Newspaper Preservation Act, which allowed newspapers to go into joint operating agreements, which kept a lot of them in business for decades.
Sure.
Oddly. But
I would not look for Trump to do that.
I wouldn't expect that kind of, consideration.
Including Rupert Murdoch. I mean, let's remember one of the reasons that the joint operating agreements allow you in the old days, you weren't, Mike, you weren't allowed to have a newspaper and a television station in the same major market.
Without getting a waiver.
That's right.
Right.
So the waiver was given to Murdoch in the New York Post with the help of who? Teddy Kennedy.
Well, the argument was that you don't want a monopoly of thought in a market, but in New York City you have such a diverse media market that it wouldn't have
mattered. Well, there's always an argument.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got a letter. Okay, here it is.
There always is.
When will this show have at least one panelist that represents a non-left-leaning panelist? If there is no intent, why should this station continue to receive public funding? A lot of implications here, one of which is First Amendment. Yeah, did you ever hear of the First Amendment? And number two, I'm fascinated by the next letter, which says, can Alan be that naive? Rosemary is on target. The Trump we saw before the elections will be the same man as president. Now, I think that's true. I've always argued that character starts at four. And doesn't change. I think that's right. But I think this is a smart man who cannot afford to have a divisive nation. And I may be wrong, and we agreed. However, letter number one says, how come everybody's in lockstep and why do you always agree with each other? And letter number two says, not so fast.
Well, we get lots of calls about balancing the panel, and we do try to bring on at least a few diverse voices. Probably could use more. We always can. But I'm anxious to see what is it you think you would get. What would they say? I mean, listen to an AM radio, and it's lockstep conservative, and that seems as
And by the way,
wild.
On Fox, they don't read letters like John's letter calling us to task.
I'm trying to think here. What about all the letters we read about the arguments between Rosemary and Alan?
Well, yes, exactly.
It's not like we all agree.
Let's not underestimate that.
Yeah, let's not.
But okay, we're both lefties, is it their point?
Well,
you have to argue more with Rich. That would be good.
Hi, panel.
We'll be here tomorrow, by the way.
Hi, Alan.
Oh,
I often disagree with Trump. But Trump, a man who said he can shoot a policeman on Fifth Avenue and get away with it. Did he say that?
No, he said, and I could shoot somebody. He didn't say a policeman. He would never shoot a policeman. He's pro-law and order.
It's not a person who will moderate his views. Have you read his plans for the first 30 days? Yeah.
We just read him aloud, in fact.
Yeah, we just did it.
By the way,
that was hyperbole and not literally intended.
Although it did, I think he might be right about it.
What are the problems?
Can we just say one thing about the shooting of policemen? There's been four of them over the weekend,
terrible.
Which is deplorable. People seem to think that if you're not pro law and order, you're in favor of that. I am not. I think it's horrible.
Yeah, well, you're right. Of course you're right.
Okay. Just to be on the record.
I have a nagging fear, says Hildegard, about what the far-right extremists, like those observed yesterday with their Nazi-like salute, will do if Trump does not deliver what he has promised. The level of violence that has been unleashed on our society makes violent payback very possible. What say you all? Thank you for being there.
Okay, again, it wasn't a Nazi-like salute. It was a Nazi salute. Why are we couching the terms?
Can you fill everybody in, Rosemary, who may not have seen it on the news or may not know what we're talking about?
It was a meeting on Saturday
in
Washington, D.C., of some very, very right-wing supporters. They met at Ronald Reagan Building. I don't know how they rented that place. And some of them were yelling out, Heil the people, H-E-I-L the people, and Heil victory. And it wasn't the only Nazi slogans that were chanted during this event. They also used the term, how do you pronounce it, Rosemary?
Lugenpressen.
For the lying press.
Lugenpressen.
Lugenpressen, which was a common Nazi term. You know, people feel emboldened, and people who are on the far right feel especially emboldened. And this is what happened at a meeting. And it's scary. I'm not saying it represents the 47% who voted for Trump. In fact, I really, truly, honestly believe it only is a small percentage, but it's still scary.
And the president-elect did not issue a statement in his own words. He had his campaign issue a statement that said, the president-elect continues to speak out against whatever. It could not have been weaker. He continues to speak out against hate crimes.
This was when Trump was complaining about Hamilton, the musical.
Yeah. So Hamilton, the musical, was offensive and rude and needed to apologize.
Well, come on now.
But Sieg Heils, come on.
No,
come on,
wasn't.
Alan. That's unfair? Is that unfair?
It wasn't
Stop
the
putting
musical.
Words in
it
my
was
mouth.
The cast member speaking to the vice president.
As an add-on to
well,
Hamilton.
It was a musical, too.
Okay.
The part about immigrants, we get it done. There was also booing in that. It was the whole thing. And he.
Yeah, but it's not what was... Trump's position now, I thought it was
I think the most offensive
reprehensible,
thing
but,
was that he called it an overrated musical.
Yeah.
Just like he calls Marco Little Marco or The Failing Times. He always has an adjective for something. Martin says, does the panel have any comments on the Washington Post article regarding Trump's plans for the federal workforce, elimination of the Department of Education? Does this become a policy mandate that the Democrats fall in line with or stonewall against? Well, I think one of the big questions right now is what the Democrats are going to do, what Chuck Schumer is going to do. Chuck Schumer and Trump have had a relationship, you know, in the past. That may help. It may hurt. The Clintons had a relationship with Trump also, and it didn't stop him from calling her names or whatever else. So Schumer's the man in the light right now. Does he save his fire for Supreme Court nominations? What does he do?
This feels to me like they're floating a balloon to find out what the reaction would be.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because this whole idea of like eliminating, cutting down the workforce and eliminating departments, I think they're floating a balloon. Because at the same time he's talking about that, or people are talking about that in his administration, he's also interviewing secretaries for education and for
Didn't Ronald Reagan say he was going to get rid of the education department, which was right after Carter created it?
This has always been one of those things that the Republicans have said.
But when you get into office, you see that it actually has a very important role, and to take it apart would actually be injurious to education around the country.
And I'm sure they poll very closely internally on this question. But what will happen is that they will get their way on things like more charter schools. They'll push like crazy on those things. And so if you have a Department of Education and you say, okay, we're going to stop meddling in the way you do things around the country, and grants that you're giving for specific reasons, we're going to give everybody a chunk of money and say, do anything you want with that chunk of money. Block
Sounds
grants.
Like what they're going
to
do
been around
Medicare.
For a long time.
Let's take a break. We'll pause it there. We'll come back. We'll get more letters and talk about other subjects as well. You're listening to the Roundtable Panel on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Traditions Linens Factory Outlet, Claverack. Annual Thanksgiving weekend decorating event with room settings, holiday ideas, winter quilts, sheets, towels, table linens, Friday and Saturday, November 25th and 26th, traditionslinens.com. Binghamton University, the State University of New York, partnering with community schools in New York State to help students from all backgrounds throughout their educational careers, binghamton.edu. LARAC, serving the arts community year-round in downtown Glens Falls since 1972, with gallery exhibits and gift shop featuring handmade items by regional artists, larac.org. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community, berkshire.coop. And the Book Loft in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a destination of imagination and discovery for readers young and old, thebookloft.com.
Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Shartok and Rosemary Armeo and Mike Spain join us this morning, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan mentioned Chuck Schumer a moment ago. I want to go to an article in the LA Times this morning about Democrats ask themselves, now what? Who'll lead the party from the wilderness and how? When Hillary Clinton lost her White House bid, it was a jagged exclamation mark punctuating several painful years for Democrats. Come January, the party will have at least 11 fewer U.S. senators, 63 fewer House seats, and perhaps a dozen fewer governors than in 2009 during President Obama's first year in office. Nationally, there will be about 900 fewer Democratic state lawmakers. By some benchmarks, the control of state capitals, for instance, the Democratic Party is in worse shape than it has been in more than a century. But Democrats, after several periods of exile from the White House, are no strangers to the political wilderness, nor fractious infighting over how to find their way back. The most immediate battle is for leadership of the Democratic National Committee. The contest will pit Washington insiders against Beltway outsiders, liberal backers of Bernie Sanders against more centrist Hillary Clinton holdovers, and advocates for a full-time chairman versus those who feel it is fine to hold another job as well, serving in Congress, for instance.
Well, it's a tough time for Democrats. And, you know, what strikes me as so ironic is that we thought it might be a tough time for Republicans at this point, expecting that at least the Senate might even out and that the White House would go Democratic. But that is not the case. This is a very strong position for Republicans. It's a time to make changes that will take decades to undo.
Going just a little off topic, but relevant, was the federal court, which yesterday said that the gerrymander, when it was done for partisan reasons, and they have a very complicated formula which show it, was unconstitutional. Now, a lot of state legislatures now are Republican, and they are Republican because what they do is they draw lines which resemble worms and handbags and, go across five counties in order to get the right proportion of people into each district, which a computer will draw for them, by the way, which means that they can't lose. Well, just want you to know that if the Supreme Court and Justice Kennedy, by the way, is a swing vote, has said that he doesn't like the gerrymander. And apparently, the way in which this thing, the federal court, the lower federal court, and it skips the final appeals and goes right to the Supreme Court of the United States. And what that will mean is if this particular court right now rules and Kennedy goes the way that he's expected to, the gerrymander might be outlawed in the United States. It is one of the most undemocratic small d institutions. We call ourselves a Republican democracy, but we're not. If you allow the people who have the power to draw the lines where only they can get elected. I just wanted to put that into the mix, Joe. I hope I'm forgiven for that. But I agree that's the way it is.
I think this is a big rebuilding year for Democrats, and that's depressing because they thought it would be a triumph, and it isn't. But jump into it. And the Republicans made a great model for how to do this. They have worked over the long term and at the lowest levels. So they now own a majority of the state houses and the governorships in the country, up to and including all the federal institutions. So there's no reason the Democrats can't be there in the same way if they just get back to work. We have to do that.
Well, the Democrats have to somehow enlist the enthusiasm that the millennials had for Bernie Sanders. They failed to do that. The millennials did not turn out, and, you know, the outcome of the election. The future, I mean, the whole debate now is whether Nancy Pelosi is going to stay as the minority leader in the House of Representatives or whether somebody younger, somebody from a different generation is going to come along. Right, Tim Ryan, right. And come along and take the party to a new generation. I don't know. What do you think is best? I mean, you don't want to give away the power that people have spent their lifetime honing overnight, but isn't it time for the younger generation to step in and take over the Democratic Party?
I do.
Yes. Yes.
I do. Look, the entire leadership in the House of Representatives is my age. You know, I'm 75, and somebody will write in and say, "Well, why don't you get out?" But
I see that note now, Alan. Yeah,
but the fact of the matter is, I think there's a point to be made. What the Democrats are doing right now isn't working, and therefore, you know, when it's not working, you wanna replace it and get somebody else in there who can at least try and who is talking the right game, the game that Rosemary was just talking about, the millennials and the hardworking people in the Rust Belt and all the other people.
Yeah. I saw Tim Ryan on television last night. I'm slowly going back to news in small doses. And I want to like him because I do like the idea of a new start. Barack Obama issued a really great endorsement for Nancy Pelosi the other day. I mean, it was a real pull.
He also endorsed Hillary Clinton.
I know, and exactly. And but Tim Ryan's, he's not impressive. I mean, he's not Nancy Pelosi. There's just not the depth and the knowledge, and so it's really hard for me. I am a centrist. It's really hard for me to say, okay, yeah, let's trust him.
He also seems that he wants to be so reverend to her.
Yeah.
That it comes off that
patronizing.
Well, not even patronizing as much as that he doesn't really want the job as much as he, you know, I'll do it for the good of the party, but she's great and, you know, sort of putting the ball in her court. But it's not like a firebrand coming
exactly.
in and this is what I'm going to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. I would argue it's not about a person's age. It's about, and Bernie Sanders proved that.
Well, their experience on the Rolodex.
Right. But I think it's the ideas have
to come
on,
Oh, it is
on,
so
Rosemary.
About age.
They
have to cannot
be young,
run again.
They have to be young and new ideas. They don't have to be, but they can come from somebody of any age.
If you're watching this when we're streaming, you have to watch Rosemary's face.
You know, I'm sorry. I would love for that to be true. But when you get near 80, which is what Bernie is and will be soon, your body breaks down. He does not have
the
stamina. It's
a
hard job.
The reality is if Bernie Sanders had a couple things go his way, he'd be the president-elect right
now. Well, you could say that about Hillary, too, though.
I know, but the fact
is... We have a 70-year-old president-elect.
I know,
but
we might have had a 75-year-old president-elect. All I'm saying is...
China.
You can have new ideas. You can be progressive. It doesn't matter what your age is. It has to be a coming
together. I like that. I like what you just said. However, I take strong exception to your thing about the older you get, the more your body breaks down. Because, you know, your body is broken down. My body breaks down. I'm older than you are.
And I am saying I'm on the right side of that.
This
knowing
is a prelude to the New York
experience.
Times story on dementia, Joe.
All right, we have.
Yeah, our minds are young.
We're very late for a break, so we will take that and we'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable into the panel discussion, and we have a lot of letters to catch up with. So let's do that, and then we'll go to a couple of topics to. Come full circle is what I was trying to say.
Joe, we did speak yesterday about Standing Rock for about a half an hour.
Yes.
And we're still getting letters saying, how come you people don't spend any time on Standing Rock? Well, I just want to remind everybody that we've continued to, and we will continue to. It is only a question of, you know, right now this country, according to some, is faced with a real moral dilemma in the form of what Trump wants to do. So, for example, the idea that you would start burning coal again. You know, I mean, these are very serious things also. So Standing Rock is important, very important. We have spent time on it. We're going to spend time on it. Anything else on this?
I don't think so. People are sending us lots of things to read, and I actually am trying to bone up on it. And I would like to see the Native Americans win this. It seems like a small point to change that.
And the criticism being that we spend too much on Trump and not
too much on
time.
Trump and not on.
So with that in mind, I report the breaking news, which is Donald Trump's meeting with the New York Times is back on.
Oh, jeez.
The spokeswoman says
maybe
there
they'll
was
talk
a,
about Standing Rock.
There was miscommunication, and he had backed out a few hours ago, and the meeting is back on.
Good.
There you go. We'll report on that tomorrow and piss you off even more. Go ahead.
good, Good morning, says Robin. Don't you think journalists and editors, actors and artists and the people on social media and in the streets have the power to provoke and derail Trump should he try to mollify the opposition by an appointment of a token moderate to his cabinet? How far do you really think he needs to go to bring the country together?
Oh, here's one more thing about Standing Rock.
Yes, please.
Trump has some interest in that company that's pushing this. And so I don't see a happy ending for this if it goes into the next administration.
A financial interest in the company?
Yeah.
Well,
he has financial interest in everything, so I don't know
how
unusual that is. Which is
putting pressure on the president to do something between now and the end of his term, yes?
Yeah, on this president, but it also raises, again, the question of what happens when your personal interest conflicts with your business.
Absolutely.
Or your government interest or
personal.
We're going
to be seeing a lot of that.
Yeah.
No, I bank with TD Bank, and I'm getting letters now saying that they have money into this also, and I should switch banks as a result of this. But this has become a very strong issue-centered piece of which brings in American history, treatment of Native Americans, and everything else, which becomes very important.
It can become a moment to educate a whole generation about the background of it, and that's the benefit of this, and one of the benefits of this.
Okay, and I'm not going to read the real garbage here. I'm not trying to be blithe, but do you think tweets will be part of a presidential library? Could well be.
Yeah, well, I mean, emails,
emails
certainly are, and tweets will be as well.
Absolutely.
Are you this, as you sit there lamenting the election of Trump and his recent media bias, I'm amazed that you don't grasp the fact that the media is totally responsible for his election. Totally responsible, see?
Besides the voters.
What'd you say? No.
Besides the voters.
Leave them alone. The old Trump and occasionally Hillary coverage of the run for the presidency is how he was elected. The fact that the media failed to provide coverage of Sanders and his vision for America led to his demise. Trump sitting in the Oval Office is completely the fault of the corporate media that wanted him to be there. I think those people sitting in this room will know that I brought up my devotion to Bernie Sanders again and again and again as this program commenced. Dear panel, maybe some of the press pool should be appointed Trump's personal Twitter archivist. We must keep an accurate account for the historical record.
I think we're doing that.
Yeah.
It doesn't go away when it's on.
Paul says, history is filled with people looking larger than life. What brought many of them down was the least expected. Maybe Trump, like Capone, will be indicted by the IRS. Love the panel. Well, it'll be his IRS, folks. It'll be his commissioner. And if you think that isn't scary, think again. Okay. Bob says, speaking of rich, and in the interest of the subject line, would he be a more frequent panel member?
Rich Honan. Rich will be with us tomorrow, and I say this as I say about all of our wonderful panelists, they have other jobs.
Good morning, panel. In regards to the previous letter wanting more balanced reporting from you guys, what do they think is missing? You've reported on exactly what Donald Trump says. You're not making up facts. Do these people not have a television? Also, the Nazi rally in Washington over the weekend is terrifying. If Alan hasn't seen the video, he should.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, it is odd that you're listening to an opinion show. We tell you our opinions, and then you get annoyed because you don't like our opinions.
Well, there's some of that. And by the way, I think it's a very small number. I think people love the show. We have all kinds of indications that it is is people's favorite show on WAMC. And, you know, that's the way it is. But there will always be people, and they're entitled to their opinions, who feel otherwise.
Does it make you a little crazy when Rich isn't on and everybody says, where's Rich? And then when Rich is on, everybody's complaining that Rich is on? Yeah. Yes. That makes me insane.
Yes.
Alan says.
But I'll get over it.
While I disagree, the root of a Trump victory vote is bigotry. I would submit that the majority of the hate speech has been cowardly, anonymous behavior, hiding behind a keyboard or a spray can. This population is not going to be victimized. It's a different time. And that's from Alan in Medina. And Judy says, I'm afraid the Republicans will bring back school prayer and creationism in curriculum. Yeah, sounds that way. William says, our old friend Andy, Trump will do what LBJ did. He will not run for the re-election in 2020. This will be his idea. And yeah, that's a good point. It's almost January, and I'll have to be doing my predictions for the year.
Oh, I'm not talking about 2020 until at least next year.
Right, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, I've been getting a lot of mail because the other day, well, I got, okay, not a lot, one letter. This guy keeps writing back to me saying, this panel endorsed Andrew Cuomo for president. And what,
really?
It's extraordinary how people make stuff up. You, Rosemary, while we were discussing the improbability of it or the probability of it, listed some of the things that he had done recently. You weren't endorsing him.
No.
You were saying this is...
No, you were giving examples of how he was setting himself up, as
correct.
Many Democrats are for the next round.
Correct. And I think you did the same, Alan, that he would contend for it.
Well, I know he's going to run. I mean, there's no question. The only question with me is whether or not these trials that are coming up with Joe Prococo and Todd Howe, who is already...
They could be the equivalent of Bridgegate for Chris Christie. They could pull his name in, even though he may not be indicted or charged. He'll be sullied by the testimony.
Or worse. It could be worse. Mm. I mean, Chris Christie's walking around, and they're still considering him for something.
Very talented man.
Yes. Never mind. Thomas says, even though the chances are slim to none, what would you think would happen to our country if the Electoral College vote changed? Stop it! In favor of Hillary. Let me explain it one more time, okay? One more time. The people who are the electors are the people who report to basically Rance Priebus, right? Because he was the head of the Republican Party. Do you really think that's going to happen? People I love and respect keep writing me these letters every day. They stop me in the street and they say, let me ask you one question. I say, no, the Electoral College, without them saying another word, the Electoral College is not going to elect Hillary Clinton. They're not going to do it.
I don't think so.
It is wishful thinking, yeah. And it was the intent of the Founding Fathers that is how it would work, that you'd have this extra layer of people who would take the good of the nation and the weight of all the evidence without emotion or influenced by the media, and they would pick the best person and keep out demagogues.
But
bad people. But that's not the way it has evolved over the last 200 years.
No, remember when the Founding Fathers were there, they didn't know that we were going to have political parties.
Correct.
Remember that? And George Washington said the evils of faction, and that meant political parties. Well, he was right, as usual.
Also, to make this, just to further muddy the waters on this, meaning as far as the success of it, you would have to find somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 to 75 of the electors to change the balance, number one. And number two, you can do it in 26 of the states.
Yeah, exactly.
So it seems like the odds are very, very slim that's going to happen, unless you have an entire state and a delegation that is going to turn. And
that would flip.
There's
no evidence that's even being considered
anywhere. I mean, last I heard, it was like one, maybe two electors total have vowed that they would change. So,
okay, during the election, I heard you, says Diana, read emails from listeners asking why you didn't have more balanced representation of journalists. I have no problem with the people you included on the panel, including those who were Trump supporters. I would love to hear those same journalists who supported him during the election respond to the issues you raised this morning about the cheering of a Trump presidency by white supremacists and the rise of harassment and bigotry since his election. Okay, Royce, not Rains, Rains. Royce writes in, what the closing speaker at the alt-right meeting in D.C. actually shouted was, in the end, was, Hail Trump, hail our people, hail victory.
Like, that makes a difference.
In context, our people very explicitly meant white people only. Hail victory is the direct English translation of Sieg Heil, being the German word for victory.
There you go.
Why did they have their hand? All right, whatever.
The right hand's upward.
Yeah.
Well, he's saying that.
The term alt-right is a prettification. I like that word.
Prettification.
Yeah. Is it really a word?
I want to check.
It's a good word.
Yeah, you like it?
We are derelict if we fail to call neo-Nazis by their proper name.
Oh, right. I agree.
And Allison says, it was 200 people in the meeting with Richard Spencer in D.C. 200. These people have always been there. Don't give them the publicity. They've been hiding under the mud, and now they have a bully protecting them. They're nobodies.
They didn't really get publicity. They had reporters in for a while. Most of the reporters left, and then they had the, you know, the Sieg Heiling stuff, and you know, somebody with their car. I think it was a reporter, but she had.
Well,
she
it was an NPR reporter who had a conversation
right.
with a guy.
No, they did
who
a whole interview with Spencer. Yeah, before and, that was before he went into this rally, and then the video came out.
E writes, the first thing a would-be dictator does to assume and consolidate power, lock in control of the military, parenthesis, cabinet appointees, and threaten the press. All hail El Presidente Trump. On NPR a while ago, the Trump scolding of the major media was described as a festive airing of grievances. And now he doesn't want to talk to the New York Times on the record. That has been changed. He's decided to go talk to the New York Times again.
For the moment.
And yes. I'm sure ball him out. If the Democrats believe that the road to success leads through coal country, then count me out. I refuse to kowtow to those who would ask us to sacrifice the environmental health of the planet so that their children can follow them to an early death coal mining. This is not progressive. I like that one. Joy says, I'm thinking that Trump is going to do grievous damage to the Republican Party with his narcissistic impulsiveness. That's it.
So all right.
It's helped him out pretty much so far this year. It's like we didn't think that the white majority would hold sway very much longer after the Romney election. And look at what happened. They came back with a strong, we're here. We're still here.
All right. Let's go to some other topics. Despite fears that dementia rates were going to explode as the population grows older and fatter, and has more diabetes and high blood pressure, a large nationally representative study has found the reverse. Dementia is actually on the wane, and when people do get dementia, they get it at older and older ages. Previous studies found the same trend, but involves much smaller and less diverse populations, like the mostly white population of Framingham, Massachusetts, and residents of a few areas in England and Wales. The new study found that the dementia rate in America an American 65 and older fell by 24% over 12 years to 8.8% in 2012 from 11.6% in 2000. That trend is statistically significant and impressive, according to a demographer at the University of Pennsylvania who is commenting on this study.
Excellent. I'm for it.
Yeah. Well, it seems to link the battle against dementia and illnesses like Alzheimer's to better health. The healthier you are, the better you're able to resist these, disease, this horrible disease, and it's people with diabetes who are overweight, who have other illnesses that are more prone to it, and unfortunately, that means that people who are less educated and lower in the economic scale often are suffering from these diseases and more prone to Alzheimer's, which is a sad development, but it talks about the economic reality of haves and have-nots in this country.
Yeah.
I know. It seems like all the health stories we read have, like, the same theme to them, which is don't smoke, eat less, exercise.
Good advice.
Well, that's what we
know, right? You got to read this whole story very carefully because there's some fascinating things about it. For example, the assumption that if you were fatter, you were going to get Alzheimer's. Not so, according to
not
some.
Good news
well, dementia.
For some of us.
Dementia.
Oh, dementia, yeah.
Yeah.
Quite right. There are more people. I heard yesterday a statistic that there were more people on opioids and heroin, I think, in this country than there were with dementia. Now, that's...
Public health.
Well, the other thing about this study is that it's numbers, it's statistics.
Yes.
And so while it's good news overall, it means nothing to those people who have it or their families who are helping them.
And it's still
4 to 5 million
Americans a year develop some form of dementia. Not all of it is because of Alzheimer's. But
it is interesting what Joe read because, you know, Framingham, you all know about Framingham?
Framingham study for heart disease.
They have been following people in Framingham for 2,000 years, ever since the dinosaurs. No, they've been friends. It's the oldest health study in the country.
interesting.
There's another one in France. I forget. It starts with an L. See, I'm dementiaizing. But there's another one in France. But this article that Joe read said that they take exception to the Framingham study, if I'm hearing it correctly, because it's different from when you do a more stratified sample for who gets dementia. Isn't that interesting?
A more stratified example.
In other words, you get people who are in other places than Framingham, which tends to be a more wealthy community and whatever else.
Yeah, well, I don't trust these studies. We'll have a story next week that we'll talk about that shows dementia is up.
Yeah.
Like, this is safe, this isn't. Coffee's significant. Good, coffee's bad.
This does seem statistically significant when you're talking about the numbers in just 16 years changing so dramatically.
All right. 1 minute, two letters.
Two letters. Okay. What are your thoughts on NPR saying they want to no longer do live interviews with conservative people? Free speech?
I have not heard about anything, and I think that may be an urban myth.
And I'm sure that's not true. Okay. Please, people, please get over it. We held a national election, and the Kremlin has spoken.
And that's a great way to end. My thanks to Alan and Rosemary and Mike. We'll be back tomorrow before the holiday break, and we welcome you to join us as well. We'll be back with more Roundtable after this.